Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, Rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Box, Box. Box, 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 Box.
Oh Gott, yes!
Holy Mac and Cheese Balls.
Und es ist wieder Sonntag und es ist noch immer kein Rennen. Caro, geht's dir gut?
Ich denke schon. Ich weiß es nicht. Ich kann es kaum mehr erwarten. Wie geht's dir, Beate?
Auch ganz gut soweit.
Ja.
Ja, irgendwie, man hat schon ein Ziel vor Auge, weil jetzt ist ja doch schon wieder sehr viel Zeit vergangen, dass es ja bald losgeht und Drive to Survive kommt ja eh auch bald. Also jetzt haben wir es eh schon bald geschafft. Aber um eben diese Wartezeit zu überbrücken, gibt es natürlich auch heute eine weitere neue Interview-Episode mit einem tollen Gast vom Williams Formula One Team.
Es ist der Executive Chef, der absolute Haubenkoch von Williams, Jonathan Francis.
Und jetzt setzt euch hin, nehmt euch ein Spaghetti Bolognese oder Pasta Schutter, gönnt euch viel Spaß mit dem Interview.
How was your way into Formula One, and did you always want to become a chef in Formula One?
I was working in fine dining restaurants in England, basically for 10 years. And one winter, I was just emailed every team, who does your hospitality, and if there's any jobs going, can you let me know in the future? And nearly everyone just ignored me and didn't come back. Williams did, funnily enough. And then they emailed me saying, thanks for getting in touch, but we don't have any positions at the moment. And then the guy who was running the Force India catering got back to me. And he literally was then, right, can you come up for an interview? So I went for an interview 2 days later. And then I got there and he was like, shall we go for a coffee? So I was like, okay. And then we get to the nearest pub, because that was the nearest place to go. And he was like, do you just want a pint? And I was like, all right, okay. So we both sat down and had a pint of Guinness and just had a chat for about an hour and a half. And a good majority of fitting in Formula One is being able to work with your colleagues. He spends so much time with them. So I think he was just sussing me out to see if he could put up with me for a year. And then he said he'd get back to me before Christmas, and he didn't get back to me. So Christmas, I was distraught. New Year's, I remember I volunteered to work New Year's Eve and New Year's Day because I was a bit older, so all the young people in the kitchen could go out. Mm-hmm. And the New Year's Day, I was like, well, that's it. I'm just another year of doing restaurant work, whatever. And then January the 2nd, he gave me a phone call and was like, do you want to come testing in Jerez? Yes, I do. And that was, 2013. And then, so I did that season with Force India. Crazy. Very different to the world I came from. I had to learn very quickly. But
So what's the major difference between working in a restaurant and working for a Formula One team?
Everything, certainly I come from quite a reasonably high-end background. So everything's very prescribed. All your recipes are written, all your produce, you know what's coming in, you know how many customers you have for lunch, you know what time everyone's going to sit. And then you go to Formula One, where just before anything else, the produce is different every week. So you can go to the first race, Melbourne, brilliant produce that we're used to in Europe. Okay, there's some differences, because obviously you're in Australia, and then 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, you're in China with loads of produce that you've got no idea how to deal with. Mm-hmm. So that was the first difference, just what you're actually cooking with. And then the biggest thing is for restaurant chefs to get their heads around is in a restaurant, you're the reason why they've come. Mm-hmm. So those people are there to eat your food, and that's the only reason why they're there. Whereas in the paddock, you're secondary. So they've come to see racing cars, or they've come to network, or they've come to do other stuff, and then what you provide them is secondary to what's going on the track. So even though in your world it's the center of everything, they might get up halfway through their meal because they're going on a pit walk, which is fine. But the first few weeks you're like completely thrown because you've come from this industry where you're the center of attention and everything's so important about what's on the plate, and then all of a sudden you're not. So it doesn't hit your ego a bit, but you've just got to readjust it slightly, I think.
How do you get prepared for a race weekend?
Let's just do Europe for simplification. Mm-hmm. like a European race, and we'll assume COVID's finished and we've got all the guests and everything back together. So it's all running 2019 spec numbers and stuff. So the week before Brexit, I'm still adjusting to how I do this now. We used to pack a 40-foot truck, a tri-tent truck. So a third of it a freezer, a third of it a fridge, and the back of it ambient. And we'd pack that in England. I'm now packing it in Bologna next week. But we'd normally pack that in England with everything we'd need, more or less, to get us in at the beginning of the week. So that would get sent the week before the race, maybe on the Thursday or Friday. Then in Europe, on the Monday, we'd fly out. Tuesday morning, we go into the paddock, unbox our kitchen, because we pack everything back, and then we have to unbox it, basically. And then at the same time on Tuesday morning, we reverse the truck into the paddock and get as much stuff off as we need for the next day or two, because there's limited refrigeration and space. Even though our kitchen unit in the motorhome is a 40-foot truck, that's still not that much space. So that's Tuesday, and then on Tuesday we start feeding people as well. Mm-hmm. So Tuesday we have all the truckies who build the motorhome, plus some early mechanics and some other bits and bobs. So we're looking about 50 people for lunch. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of when the race begins, for us anyway. We get all the numbers and stuff in advance, so that's no stress. And then the following day, the Wednesday, we start building up into the race weekend then. So Wednesday, all the mechanics are in. So you've got more people for lunch again. And Wednesday is the last sort of setup day, as we call it. Because then, if we're lucky, we won't do dinner. Hopefully, the mechanics have got the car together enough that we can all go out and have dinner somewhere nice. Then Thursday, that's when it all kicks off for us. So Thursday is media day. So drivers turn up, all the directors, board, VIP, everyone who's important in the team is there on a Thursday. Engineers are in now. So by this time, we already know how many team we need to cater for over the weekend. And then normally on a Thursday, she would have given me a bit of advance warning, but I normally sit down with the head of marketing, and then we go through what guests we're going to have that weekend. Because I don't know if you know how we deal with our hospitality setup at Williams, but we have a ground floor restaurant that we use to feed the team, and also journalists, friends of the team, some partners. And then we have a mid-level restaurant, which is quite high-end. We have a partnership with Michael Caines, who has a one-star restaurant in Devon. So we have a chef from him to come and do our middle-floor food. And then we have the roof terrace as well, where we do food up there, and there's a bar and all sorts. So from Thursday onwards, that's more or less fully functioning. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're flat out. So we do breakfast for the boys, 7 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock. And then on a Friday, we do a brunch for the journalists. And then at 12 o'clock, we'll start serving guests. We can do 30 or 40 on the bottom floor, another 20 on the middle floor, plus who else? Who God knows on the roof. So yeah, from Friday onwards, it's just flat out 16-17 hours a day.
So what is the most stressful time for you?
I get stressed over making sure that my produce is arriving. So as long as you've got what you need to cook and you've got everything in for your meals and your services, that's the first stress out of the way. And then the most stressful time for me probably is guest services. Well, I say guest service on a weekend lunchtime. There's so much going out at once and trying to keep an eye on everything. That's the most stressful bit. So, for instance, Saturday lunchtime, we'll have the boys being fed in the garage. So that's 70 to 90 people. Then again, your 30-odd covers on the middle floor, plus your 20-odd covers on the top ground floor as well. And it's all going out at the same time. So as much as we try to bring people in, like a restaurant, again, you're secondary to what's going on around you. So you adapt. So yeah, that's probably the most stressful thing, when a lot comes in at once and you're trying to keep your standards as high as you can, but also you need to adapt a little bit to make sure that everyone's being fed and being looked after. We have quite a large advantage, being that everything's free and there's lots of free drinks. So that's one, that's an easy way to keep people happy.
That's the way to keep people happy, to be honest.
And of course, we're always more critical of what we're sending. So you always look at things with a far more critical eye than the people who are receiving it. So hopefully, anyway. Mm-hmm. So that gives us a little bit of an advantage as well. But yeah, so weekend lunchtimes are probably the most stressful for me.
And do you want to serve better food than other racing teams? We have better food than Mercedes or Ferrari or...
Not really, if no. I'm honest. We're not competing. Well, I don't think we're competing against each other. I've got lots of good friends up and down the paddock, and we help each other out a lot. And I think that lots of teams, they deal with the problem differently. Mm-hmm. And they have different solutions and different styles, none of which is right or which is wrong. For instance, let's say Mercedes, as you may know, they have Doe & Co. from Austria who service them. And they're very high-end and fine dining and lots of staff, very formal. Whereas we're probably a little towards the other spectrum. We're quite informal. My food's very bistro-y. I just like to cook things I like. Mm-hmm. I make up the menu maybe a week or two before, whereas at the other end of the paddock, they'll probably have all their menus planned weeks and months in advance. So I want to say I'm not winging it by any means, but I wouldn't be scared to change something if I went to the supermarket the day before and saw something really delicious. I'd be like, right, let's put that on the menu this week. For instance, in last year in Portugal, we had our new owners, Dalton's. They had 10 of them coming in, and I'd been to Parma a few weeks before. I'd stopped on the way down to Mugello and picked up this beautiful 24-month Parmesan and these beautiful meats from this wonderful shop in Parma, where somehow in the middle of the paddock I got to go and just taste everything off the bar, and they fed me everything. It was delicious. So then when our new owners and stuff came in, that's what I gave them, just meats and cheese, really simple stuff, and then a couple of Portuguese dishes, and just a relaxed service style, shall I say. So as I've wandered completely off topic again, yeah, I don't feel the need to compete with the other teams, because we're all approaching the situation differently. Mm-hmm. And like I said, nothing's right, nothing's wrong. We're all working on different budgets to different guests, to different sponsors. So that's just the way I like to do it.
So you make a plan 2 or 3 weeks before the race weekend.
Yeah. Where are we going next? Imola. Mm-hmm. So I've literally done Imola this week.
Okay.
Which is, I've been like, I've done 9 seasons now, so I know what I can get in various countries. I have a very good relationships with the supplier in Italy. So I spoke to Emiliano on Monday and was like, right, I need to pick up this stuff 2 weeks Monday. What can you do for me? What have you got? What's nice? What isn't so nice at the moment? And then he's scurried off and come back to me, and then I've just made up the menu from that, mainly pieced together from previous menus from going to Italy, even though we've only been to Imola once before, or I have anyway. At the moment, with just a team, it's easier. You know what's coming at you. Yeah.
What would you say is the most popular food? What's your speciality? Where, for example, team members say, hey, can you please cook this again for us?
Honestly, I do like a Chinese night where I cook British-style Chinese food.
Okay.
So I do a General Tso chicken and a crispy chili beef and some special fried rice. And that's the one where they always come in and go, wow, that was amazing. Wow, can I have the recipe? How do you do that? And it's some of the simplest stuff we do. Basically, throw most of it through the deep fat fryer and then cover it in ketchup with some five spice in it. That's simplifying it slightly, but that's basically what it is. And they love it. They always go mad for it. They always like a good curry, being British, fish and chips. Yeah, the home comfort food. I try and mix it with a little bit of the location we're in, and then a little bit of British cuisine as well. So we're always got to keep an eye on, not morale, but yeah, keeping people happy and giving them home comforts, especially if you've been away for 2 or 3 weeks. That really goes quite a way to keeping them happy, which is important.
When is a race weekend successful for you?
Probably not until we finish the last meal of the weekend, which we call the pack down meal. So I always stress to new chefs or new people who come and work with us how important that last meal is, because lots of other teams, shall we say, are just like, right, let's get out, here's a tray of lasagna or something, and then let's go, because we've still got lots of work to do to pack everything down, especially on a flyaway race. Whereas I think it's very important to make that meal as good quality as everything else you've done that week, because that's what people will remember when they go home or whatever. They'll be like, if the pack down meal's not very nice, they'll be like, oh well, pack down was shit, what were the chefs doing all week? So let's make sure pack down's perfect, and then after that I can relax a bit. We've still got to pack stuff into boxes to send on to the next Grand Prix or back to England, but once the cooking's finished, then it's the pressure's off a little bit, because I don't care what time we finish packing down. If it takes another 5 hours, it takes another 5 hours. The important thing is that the boys were looked after, because they're still having really long days, and they keep them fed, keep them happy.
And how important is local food for you? So how much do you buy in a country, for example in Austria? Do you go to a local supermarket to get fresh vegetables?
Yeah, in Austria, there's, right next to the circuit, next to our hotel, we stay in the Best Sleep, which is like 5 minutes away from the circuit. Then there's a big cash and carry next door. So a cash and carry is like it's like a wholesale supermarket for the hospitality industry. That's what we call it in England. So yeah, I'll buy loads of stuff from there. Well, what we used to do was send out like a little get us in load of fruit and veg from England, but we can't do that now because of Brexit. So I'll be buying everything locally. So yeah, I'll buy everything in Spielberg when we go to Austria this year. All the fruit and veg. There's some good, like, there's a, some like meat supermarket there. I can't remember what it's called. Fleisch something.
Yeah.
You've got Lidl, Aldi, all that lot. They're not too bad for like day to day stuff. But Trans Gourmet, that's what it's called in Austria. Trans Gourmet. That's super good. They've got some really nice stuff in there. So you just get everything easily.
Another very important question, because people always think working in Formula One is so glamorous and fancy. So what would you say is the biggest misconception about working in Formula One?
Yeah, I wouldn't... It's not very glamorous and fancy. I think when work to people, they're surprised by how many hours I work and how much time I spend at the circuit, and how sometimes I can go to a country and just see a hotel and a racetrack and a supermarket. And that's it. They think you have this wonderful life while you're traveling around the world, and then at lunchtime you make a bit of lunch and then you go out for dinner and then you travel off somewhere else, and easy. But it's very hard work. And I think the other thing people don't tend to realize, and to be honest I didn't before I started doing it, is the novelty of living in a hotel wears off very quickly. And the amount of time you spend away from home and your family and your friends is also it's a lot, and you invest a lot of your time and life into Formula One. You sacrifice quite a lot back home to go and do this job. It's, don't get me wrong, it's an amazing job and I love what I do. But there are some negatives. It's not all positive. Lots of positives.
Yeah.
Especially after like the first few races of the season, when the boys get used to putting the new car together, so they spend less time at the track, and the less time they spend at the track, the less time I spend at the track. So then we get to have a few more evenings off, which is good because we have like Austin and Mexico towards the end of the season, so I can go out and eat amazing food. It's a little annoying in Melbourne because it's a fierce race, so everything's got to be perfect. So you just spend the entire week at the racetrack. You've spent 24 hours on a plane, might go out for dinner Tuesday, and then you spend the rest of the week at a racetrack and fly on Monday. But it is what it is. quite often I've been fortunate enough to stay out there for a week afterwards. That's how I do it. Maximize my weeks in between races and then stay out in between. It's a bit more relaxed. Go off exploring, just eating and drinking.
But it must have been horrible last season when you get to Australia and then going back after, I don't know, 5 days because, there's no race happening.
Oh, Friday morning. So Friday morning in Australia. Thursday night, people were talking about it. And then the last thing I saw was going to bed Thursday night, something about McLaren. Okay, I won't worry about it. And then I get up super early to go to the central Melbourne market, because like I mentioned earlier, I quite often just change stuff on the fly. So I went to the market to see what fish and stuff they had that was really good. So I went there, bought my fish, got some oysters and some other stuff, went and had a coffee and a pastry. I was like, oh, can't wait. First race, going to cook some lovely food. Brilliant. Get in, start prepping it, and then the rest of the team start coming in, and there's grumbles and stuff, and I'm like, okay, well, until someone tells me to stop, I'm going to carry on cooking. So cooking, and then we had the meeting. So we all came into the hospitality area, and then Claire informed us of what was going on, and from then it was like, okay, pack down. All the prep and everything for the weekend we were then trying to just give to the boys in this mad pack down on a Friday, which was so absurd. because normally packed hands on a Sunday night, and just the middle of Friday afternoon, just very, very surreal. And then, yeah, Friday night, we were back in the hotel.
And there was it for a long time.
That was it. That was it. So, like, no one took anything seriously then. On the Saturday, I went and met my friend, who's a chef at Haas. Mm-hmm. We went to a restaurant called Naked by Satan and just sat there all day. And then the Sunday we flew back, the following Wednesday, I think we went into lockdown, and then I was there till Austria.
What happened with the food, with all the food you had and you planned?
Don't ask.
Okay.
No question here. Because in Austria, there are so many crazy regulations in Austria, like you have to throw it away and can't give it away and all those things. So this is mad. Mm. This is really, really mad.
Yeah, there was just, because it was so unusual, there wasn't anything in place where we could go, right, can you take this to a homeless shelter or whatever. Some circuits now are getting really on board with it because they've seen the wastage that some teams produce. Mm-hmm. And like Circuit de Catalunya, they come round every, at the end of the test or at the end of the race, they let us all know before that they'll come round, and then we just label everything and date it so they know how old it is, and then it goes off and gets recycled, which is really good. It would be nice to do that everywhere. Some circuits are more up to speed on it than others.
But let's talk about really good things. So what's the most memorable moments whilst working in Formula One?
Oh, that's tricky. My first year at Williams was really nice because it was 2015. We were quite competitive. There was lots of running around, hanging off pit walls, going to podiums, all that exciting stuff. The podium in Mexico City, it's like a baseball stadium or something, is it? So there's like football stands around you, and the atmosphere there was really cool. I went on VJ's yacht in 2013. That was quite fun. Big 100-meter yacht in the middle of Monaco Harbour when I was completely out of my depth, just winging it. That week, actually, this is an interesting, well, my first like Formula One-y moment, because the first four races I'd just been flat out, heads a mess, just trying to not get sacked. So then Spain came and went, and then we went to Monaco, and Otmar had been given this big tin of caviar that he wanted to take home on his flight on the Sunday. So he came in the kitchen and asked my boss, who was like, Dave, can you, do you mind just chilling this and putting some ice around it so I can take it home? Dave was like, yeah, no worries. We have a vac pack machine, so a vacuum packer. So what Dave was going to do was just put the ice in and then put a bag over it and just seal it. As he was putting it in the vac pack machine, VJ comes in through the door, wants breakfast. It was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday, but it's VJ, so yeah, no stress. So of course Dave stops what he's doing and then runs off and starts getting bacon and sausages and stuff out to make him a breakfast bap, or I can't remember what it was. As this was going on, the vac packers sealed and vacuumed, so it's crushed the tin of caviar. It's probably like £1,000 worth of caviar. Then Dave hasn't realised, makes the sandwich, VJ's happy, whatever, and then we get back to the tin of caviar and then we're like, oh shit, what do we do now? So then we kind of opened it, and then Dave's got it all over his hands, and he's literally just washing hundreds of pounds worth of caviar off his hands down the sink, and I'm like, what's going on? And then we made it all look almost like nothing had happened. and put it back in the fridge and was like, are we going to get away with this? And Otmar didn't even come back to pick it up.
Okay.
just left and forgot about it. Welcome to Formula One.
Also unser Plan, Caro, sollten wir es jemals ins Paddock schaffen, wir werden uns bei Williams durchkosten, weil da haben wir jetzt Kontakte.
Auf jeden Fall. Und ich würde mal sagen, um das Erlebnis auch wirklich zu spüren, wirklich zu, weißt du, auch testen zu können, wir fangen dort mit Frühstück an, gehen dann weiter, machen weiter mit einem Nachmittags, mit einem Vormittagskaffee.
Ich wollte gerade sagen, was dann, ist? Die überspringt da das
Nein. Dann das Mittagessen, ja, danach eine Jause mit Kaffee und danach das Abendessen und nach dem Abendessen dann die Cocktails.
Genau, und dann noch so ein klitzekleiner Mitternachtssnack.
Ja.
Dann rollen wir raus.
Genau.
Passt. Wir hätten unsere Pläne bezüglich Österreich Grand Prix. Und ja, das war's mit der heutigen Episode. Nächstes Mal mit dabei die Sarah Kabitzer, die ist bei Alpine Aerodynamikerin. Wir freuen uns schon drauf. Ihr dürft euch auch drauf freuen. Und ja, bis nächste Woche. Tschüss.
Tschüss.
Box, box. Box, 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 box.
Oh God, yes! Holy mac and cheese balls.
Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, Rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.